Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Forensic Psychology is a podcast that provides an illuminating window into the workings of the criminal mind. Now, here's your host, Dr. Carlos.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Today we have a great guest, Kelly Sayre, S-A-Y-R-E. She's the head of the Diamond Arrow Group. We're going to talk about situational awareness. We're going to be talking about how you can help empower women with realistic tactics. This is what Kelly does, and tools to help them live life safely and on their own terms. With a grounded approach and high energy, Kelly works with law enforcement, nonprofit, corporate, and youth organizations on emergency preparedness, situational awareness training, and personal safety. By the way, folks, if you want to learn more about her, you can also go to Instagram. You can find her there at the Diamond Arrow Group. The Diamond Arrow Group. Isn't that a cool name? I think it's a cool name. She's saving lives through prevention and avoiding violence. No apologies mindset. Definitely give her a follow there. She's got a lot of great insight that she provides on Instagram. So it's really cool stuff. By the way, she also has a book called Sharp Women. Sharp Women. We'll talk a little bit about that in a little bit as well. So before we get started, folks, you know what to do. Share, subscribe, hit that like button. You know, we like it. It's not wasting any more time. Welcome to the show, Kelly Sayre. Welcome, Kelly.
Hello, Dr. Carlos. How are you?
Great. Thank you. How are you doing?
Good.
Thank you so much for doing this too. I really appreciate it.
No, thanks for having me on. The more opportunities I can help bring awareness to what I do and what differentiates me from most quote unquote situational awareness trainings, the better.
Awesome. And you know what, by the way, folks, I forgot to mention, go to the diamondarrowgroup.com website to learn more about what Kelly's offering over there, the books, the trainings, and all that other stuff too. So Kelly, let's start off with this. What got you motivated to do this?
It's actually a funny story because I don't have a martial arts background. I don't have a law enforcement background, no military background. I've always been an active person, felt physically strong, but I realized, you know, if I was ever actually attacked, I don't know if I would know what to do. Grew up with a younger brother. We were close in age. So that was my wrestling partner growing up, you know, as typical sibling fighting and grappling. But didn't really feel like I had the necessary skills to defend myself if need be. So I took a women's self-defense class. It was awesome. We spent 4 hours hitting, kicking, punching, blocking, all that cool stuff. That's really fun to do and get some aggression out. And then at the very end of class, one of the instructors said, but hey, the reality of violence is you're not going to get attacked by someone who thinks you're going to kick their butt. So, you know, predators seek prey that they feel like they have a high chance of winning the fight. So the thing that you need to do, you know, is be more situationally aware. And I was like, wait, in my head, I did the full stop. We just spent the entire time working on physical skills that I'm supposed to avoid trying to use. And the thing I'm supposed to use 99% of the time was nothing more than a, hey, just be aware. See ya. We didn't talk about it at all. And in my head, I went, what is situational awareness? And how do I know if I'm looking for the right things? How do I know if I see something that it's the right thing? And then if I see it, what do I do? How do I react? How do I take action? And that really spurned me onto a journey of trying to find the answers. And the more I reached out to individuals via LinkedIn, you know, very professional said, hey, I'd like to take this training that I see you're offering, situational awareness training, and I'd love to take it. And they're like, well, it's really only for law enforcement, or it's the military, the combat hunter program, the Marines, different things like that. And people would say, but, you know, go check out Gavin DeBecker's Gift of Fear. And I read that book and I was like, this is awesome. But that was the only book on the shelf, so to speak, that talked to the civilian aspect and especially the female aspect of personal safety. And it kind of blew my mind because that book was written in 96 or 97. Right. And there hadn't been anything since and nothing from a female perspective. And so I was saying, well, you know what? This is the information that's out there. And Left of Bang is another example that I talk about, or Verbal Judo, different books that people would say, you know, but why don't you just read this book? And that'll really help you. And yes, it was gaining knowledge. I felt like I was doing a self-study program, independent study program, but it was fascinating. And then I would say, okay, well, how can I apply these skills to my everyday life as a mom, as a wife, as a friend, as a female who loves to travel, who as an independent female who, you know, doesn't want to let the big scary world intimidate her or stop her from doing things that she loves to do. And so I started putting the dots together, connecting the dots, and then sharing what I was learning as I went along. And that really has been my journey. And it was a very organic growth. And, you know, if I posted something wrong or said something incorrect, you know, the internet was very kind in pointing out that I was incorrect. And a lot of times it wasn't that I was incorrect. It's just, they had never considered the female perspective. So what ended up happening is a great discussion on, hey, I see your point and what you're talking about or what you're saying, your perspective, but this is where I'm coming from. You know, and the classic example that I like to use is, you know, back into parking spots, back into all the parking spots that you can. So you have easy exit if need be. Well, when I'm getting groceries, that's not an option. I have two growing boys. They eat a lot. So I need to unload a lot of groceries. So it wasn't that I could back in. It was like, okay, that's not an option. So how can I load groceries safely? And thinking of this, and I've got two small children and maybe I have a baby carrier. So do I put the kids in the car? All these different things. I live in a cold climate. So in the winter, there's just different nuances. And so it actually provided for a lot of healthy discussions on different perspectives.
Very diplomatic of it, yes.
I try. I mean, do unto others as you would want done unto you. So,
well, the internet can be quite an interesting place. I don't want to get on that soapbox. But yeah, I mean, that's great observation by you talking about that, because I think a lot of people probably would have glossed over it when they mentioned situational awareness. We did see a lot of that in self-defense classes where people just say, hey, you need to be situationally aware, and then just kind of drop it right there and leave it.
Right.
And it encompasses a lot. I think in this podcast, I think a lot of people have noticed that over the years we've done the podcast, people have learned that there's just more. There's more to it than what looking at somebody's hands, putting your back up against the wall while you're standing at a corner. There's a lot to it. I mean, that's important stuff too, but there's a lot more. And for women, it's interesting, as you noticed, as you highlighted, that there are distinctions between males and females and what they should be aware of. There's different skill sets sometimes, depending on the individual. That's going to change the ball game too. And as you mentioned, how would I say it? Perpetrators tend to use cost and benefit analysis a lot in a weird way. So as you mentioned, if they see, I think it was the Gates study that showed it, everybody keeps quoting the Gates study in situational awareness world, where they looked at the criminals were analyzing videos of people and who would you target? And you probably heard about it by now. They always target the ones who walk slowly, who appeared weak, something about them they seem they could take for whatever reason.
Yes.
So let me ask you this. I guess my first question would be, what are some of the more specific distinctions that you notice between male and females in regards to situational awareness?
Intuition, the ability to read nonverbals, to use a social experiment example, so to speak, is a woman can see her friend walk into a room and go, what's up? Just the instant her friend walks in the room, the way she's carrying herself, and say, hey, what's up? What's going on? Are you having a bad day? No offense, guys, you know, but my husband can walk in and I've just gone to the hairstylist and I'm like trying to flip my hair to get him to notice that I got my hair done. And he's like, hey, hon, how's it going? You know, there's just different things. Women are more in tune to nonverbals. And what I found, and you being the psychologist could correct me if I'm wrong, but what I found is that comes from our natural caretaker, nurturer. Hmm. Like what is ingrained in us from the old days, because we're typically the ones raising children, history has shown. And kids are nonverbal for quite a while. So we have to be able to read and understand what our kids need through their nonverbals. And then at the other end of the spectrum, we're typically the caretakers for our elderly family. So if they've lost any speech capabilities due to, you know, maybe a seizure or a stroke or something, we are also then need to be able to communicate and understand their needs primarily through nonverbal communication. And that's where in my book, I talk about, to me, the real enemy of women isn't a person or a thing. It's that we doubt our intuition. We doubt that gut instinct because when we're not taught those articulation skills early on, it's not really discussed how our intuition process works. Doesn't talk about how, you know, moms don't have eyes in the back of our head. We use our hearing, but oh, well, how does that work? And how, you know, give us examples that we can relate to and then give us the verbiage to articulate how we knew what we knew, you know? And so when we're getting all these intuition signals from all of our different senses, maybe our smell, our sense of smell or a feeling or whatever it may be, we can't articulate how we know, we just know. And then what happens is if you listen to your intuition, which a lot of times I've found that the younger generation, whether that's K-12 or even college, is we trust our intuition so much that we don't know that we trusted it. I don't know. I'm just getting a creepy feeling. I'm going to leave. Well, then you don't get validation that you avoided a potentially dangerous situation. And if you retell the story later, like, hey, I was hanging out after school and got this really weird feeling. So I took off with my friends. People might be like, were you overreacting? You know, and nowadays, a lot of times, so many true crime podcasts and true crime TV shows, people's paranoia starts spinning up. And then people say, oh, yeah, I got to stop watching those shows or listening to those podcasts. Because I'm paranoid. And instead of being able to differentiate between paranoia and true intuition signals. And we're just not talking about that. We're not teaching our kids that. And in my opinion, there's probably people out there, but I would say as society in general, we're not having the conversations in a way that relates to our personal safety.
No, that's a great point. I don't think they are. And intuition, you know, well, you said a lot of things now that made me think about different things. Those were some great points in there. And I'll backtrack a little bit back to the psychology world. When you mentioned the women and the maternal instincts and things of that nature, and it's interesting, yeah, because there are studies that analyze, and I like to look at a lot of them, especially the developmental stages when they're earlier than six. And the first 6 months, people, I don't think a lot of people realize, maybe in the academic world, but a lot of people don't realize in the non-academic world that when the baby has an issue going on, right? The baby's hungry, the baby's got a little stomach pain, gas, whatever, can't talk like you mentioned. So that right side of that brain is the only thing that's really going on. And that's the left side is our logical side or talking side or verbal side. So that's not operational probably till about 1.5, starts coming online, but really fully online around 3 or 4 when they can start putting more than 24 words together and they can put context. But no, it's interesting because the mom, when she sees the baby expressing anger or expressing pain, the mom will make eye contact with the baby and she'll read that. And it's really a huge important part of the development of that baby's brain, because when she realizes the baby's in pain, her voice, the way she says it's okay, the way she soothes the baby by touching it, and by the way she looks at the baby, all helps develop emotional regulation in that baby. And I think that's one of the areas why women develop much better emotional intelligence, as they call it nowadays, right? For being able to read other people's emotions and feelings and body language and pick up things. And I'm going to share a story if I can with you, because I think it would apply. You can always use it. I just don't remember who told it to me. It was either a homicide detective or a special forces guy. So go figure. But it always stood out to me on the importance of listening to your intuition, because he was telling me of a story about there was a serial rapist down in LA years back. And his little gambit was every time a woman approached a gate, she'd unlock the gate, and then he'd come behind her and say, "Hey, you know, my buddy's in there and I can't get him on the phone. Do you mind if you let me in?"
So like an apartment complex type?
Something like, gate? Yeah, I think it was an apartment complex. Exactly. So you know how those kind of gate things with the open thing. So yeah. She opened the gate. I don't know why I'm showing it. Nobody can see it. They're not hearing the show, but I'm turning my hands like a key, folks. So anyway, she says, "Yes, go ahead. No problem." Because she said later on in the interview with the homicide detective after the sexual assault, unfortunately, that he seemed nice. But the key thing that stood out for him and me and everyone else who heard the story at the time was that she said, "I got a funny feeling about him. And I didn't listen to it. Something said, nah, don't do it. But then I had this other voice," and I want to talk about this with you in a little bit too. "I had another voice that said to me, don't be paranoid. Not everybody's bad. Just let it go." And she didn't. She did let it go, and she just let him in, unfortunately. And I'm not blaming her whatsoever, folks.
No.
It's just the ability to be able to listen to that intuition, because the next time, it happened again. And it was a couple of weeks later, he struck again. He asked this woman, "Hey, can you let me in, my friend, da, da, da." She said, no. She shut the gate. This set him off. Eventually he got in, found her apartment, was in the window looking to see if it was her. She saw it was him. He saw her. So now he's trying to bang into, trying to kick the door open. So obviously set him off to no end. She didn't agree. She ended up calling the cops, and they were able to get him arrested. And that was the end of that. When they asked her, she said, "I just got a creepy feeling, and I don't trust anybody like that." So, you know, I seemed like a nice guy, but that was the end of it. And I guess the interesting point was the first comment that I heard, which was, "I don't want to think of everybody that way." And I get that. That's a difficult position to be in, right? We don't want to think everybody's bad. When you watch Criminal Minds all the time and you're binging on Criminal Mind episodes, yeah, you think everybody's a serial killer around your neighborhood. So I guess my comment to you or question to you is, have you heard that before, where they second guess themselves, or they even feel bad if somebody else?
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. Unfortunately. Okay. And it's not always as violent as a rape. Sometimes it's just swindling. Sometimes it's just somebody tricking you. And then there's just that, well, this is off. And that's why in a lot of my trainings, I focus on, we're not looking for a specific threat. We're not looking for a specific person. We're looking for clues. We're staying curious. Getting curious then helps kind of cut off the paranoia, because you don't feel like you're being judgmental. You're being curious. You're trying to get more information. So whether that Good Samaritan is offering you help that you didn't ask for. Again, no, I don't want to view all humanity as evil intent, but I'm also going to get curious. I play a video, and perhaps you've seen it with all the videos you share on your channels regarding situational awareness, is it's a overhead camera at an ATM, and a woman is going to put an envelope in, and she's not looking. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah, the old switcheroo one.
Yeah, and then he switcheroo. I play that video in my classes because I say, listen, you know, if you're going to forget that monsters are real and they look like people, because sometimes they're going to act like a good Samaritan. And I say, it's not that people offering to help you are all bad people, because that's a very cynical way to live and you don't want to live that way. Yeah. And there's absolutely nothing wrong if somebody interrupts what you're doing, offers you assistance that you didn't ask for, to be like, didn't know I needed help. Do I look that desperate or something? I always say, you got to figure out I use sarcasm and humor. So to me, I would be sarcastic and say something to gauge their reaction. A lot of times predators want victims perpetrators want victims that aren't going to be loud or bring attention. So if you're saying something, and it can be kind of nice, humorous, it's like if somebody's following, if you think someone's following you, sometimes simply turning around and being like, hey, can I help you? Is enough for them to be like, oh, she's aware. She knows I'm behind her. And now she's used her voice to bring attention. And I'm going to wait for the an easier potential victim. And so it's things like that where, yes, they second guess. And because they're also socially programmed, you know, to be kind, be nice, don't be rude, don't be judgmental. And this, I'd love to get your opinion. Did the anti-bullying movement go too far? Has it gone too far in healthy human behaviors, healthy human relationships, to now the point of don't be mean to anyone, be everyone's friend, play with the kid, even if you don't want to play with the other kid. And so that's where I personally am curious, because now that's what I hear so often is, well, I didn't want to be mean. I didn't want to be rude. I didn't want to make them feel sad, uncomfortable, angry, whatever. And I kind of want to put a pin in that conversation, because here's something interesting you also brought up about that LA rapist. So the first woman let him in and didn't, you know, antagonize him, shall we say. But the second woman did and was like, no. And then it made him angry, and he still came after her. And that is one thing too, that I often hear from women is, I don't want to make it worse. You know, fight, flight, freeze, or fawn is so often women fawn or go with it, because the fear of the individual escalating or going more physical or getting more upset is almost more frightening. And so there's often this sticky point of, well, I don't want to make things worse. And a lot of times a woman standing up for herself or being quote unquote rude, being direct, you get some negative backlash from that. And so what I've heard and what I've experienced firsthand is there's that very delicate balance of being direct with a tinge of humor, so they feel like you almost give them a tactical exit in laughing it off and walking away, versus getting angry and then feeling a grievance towards you. So this is why this fascinates me, is because there's so many layers. It's so much about human behavior, so much about how to read instantly, because if you are direct and you see them escalating, now you almost have to do-si-do and, okay, I better inject some humor here and see if that, oh, okay, that de-escalated because I used some humor and now he doesn't feel as offended. But yet at the same time, then so I've got him laughing and now I can be like, no, really, don't grab my ass again. Oh, sorry. Can I swear on this podcast?
That's fine. Okay. Joe Rogan says a lot worse. Yeah.
But though, that's the delicate balance all the time is, and that all to me goes back to reading nonverbals. How are they taking the information I'm giving out without also owning it? Like the emotional boundary of, just because you don't like my boundary doesn't mean I need to change my boundary, but maybe I need to reinforce it in another way that de-escalates or keeps the situation calm.
That's great. I haven't heard the fawning component. It is such a big component of it. By the way, folks, again, we're talking to Kelly Sayre, S-A-Y-R-E. You can find her on Instagram at The Diamond Arrow Group. You can go to find her on the website, thediamondarrowgroup.com. The book is called Sharp Women. If you know any females, any sisters, obviously everybody, a sister, a mother, a girlfriend, wife, daughters, whatever. It's a great book to recommend for them. Sharp Women, Embrace Your Intuition, Build Your Situational Awareness, and Live Life Unafraid. You know, you brought up a lot of great points again, Kelly. I'm trying to figure out where I start with it. Okay. So you brought up intuition. We talked about that, and that fawning component is really interesting. because you said it's important to understand the cues. The nonverbals are great. They really are important. And I guess I would have to add to that would be the importance of understanding, you know what, if that person got upset, this is telling me something. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things about jiu-jitsu and martial arts, a lot of times we learn when we throw out something, you throw out a jab, if you try to grab the right arm, you learn from their response as well. You learn to see what they're going to do, how they're going to counter it, just like a chess match. And then you figure out, okay, this is what they're going to try to do. So I'm going to try this to counter that. And they look 2-3 steps ahead. And I think women can do that as well. Guys too, but in this conversation about women, if they have the ability to look and say, wow, you know, he got upset because of that. So this is something, this is a red flag that I have to be careful with, because this could lead to lots more serious trouble coming up. And I'll ask you that question again in a second, but I'll ask you now, what do you think about that?
No, I was actually thinking that goes into emotional boundaries. And what so often I hear women take on that other person's anger. Oh, I made them angry. I made them upset. That's my fault. It's not, you made the observation correct. Yes, they got upset. They got angry. But to your point, that tells you then more about them than you. And so you need to have that emotional boundary and not take on their anger. Instead, say, that's a clue. I'm curious about this. Okay, the intent maybe wasn't as altruistic as they're trying to play it off. And that gives me more information. And so not that I need to then rise up and meet them at that anger level. But again, it's just a clue. Okay, I am right in setting this boundary. And now I need to stay very present, very mindful. I need to stay very aware of their nonverbals. And you joked before, it's not just about watching their hands. But in moments of tense situations, that's also a sign. Are they clenching their fists? Are they having some adrenaline rush here? What's going on? But those are all little nuances, because again, and depending on the study, you may know the number better, that large portion, 75 to 85 to even 90% of attacks on women come from someone we know. So that's where, in my perspective, is you're going to have a lot more fawning. You're going to have that, because guess what? These are our boyfriends or someone we're in a relationship. So maybe there's the, oh, maybe he's just having a bad day. Oh, I made him upset. And so healthy relationship, understanding what a healthy relationship looks like, or it's a coworker. Well, I can't just quit my job because this individual made me upset, or a family relative. Okay, I don't like being around this person, but guess what? Every holiday or family get together. So a lot of times fawning is just a means of co-relating, co-inhabiting an environment, or being in an environment that we don't really have a lot of choice to leave, or the choice to leave is going to take an extended period of time. So that's where I love this stuff, is because it gets so fascinating. And the more that we can talk about, this is the reality. This is the perspective that women face. Then the more we can have really good discussions with individuals like yourself, who have such a wealth of knowledge, and we can say, okay, well, help us articulate this, or why do our brains do this, or why do we get this feeling here? And the more that we can dig into that, the more we can talk about the realities, and A, it'll make self-defense instructors better, because they'll understand their students or the perspective of their female students, and it'll make society in general understand it's not just as easy as saying no and walking away. That's too much of a canned answer, because it all depends.
That's the big thing, right? A lot of times it is context. And you were reading my mind, because I was, when you were talking earlier about reading body language, you're getting those red flags that we see if they get angry. It's going to make a difference whether it's a stranger, a coworker, a boyfriend. We know a lot of the sexual assaults, a lot of them are people you know. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming a lot of what I read, usually a misunderstanding of signs. A lot of guys, we know studies have shown that guys tend to overestimate women who are interested in them. So if they're nice, if they talk to them, if they smile, then they automatically think, oh, I have a shot at with this one. And then it's also, I guess, I don't know how much this is going on still. You know, I'm 50, so who knows by now, but I, you know, societal mores. And yes, what I mean by that is, okay, if this girl comes over to my house tonight, that means something's going to happen tonight. Right. And 20, 30, 40 years ago, that was pretty much the estimate for a lot of guys. They figured if she came over, she feels comfortable enough or she's interested enough to pursue that. I don't know if today's world, from what I've been hearing from the younger generation, it's not that way as much anymore. I don't know if you get any insight on that. I've been talking to a lot of my female students and stuff, and it was one of the conversations we were having, is trying to figure out, is that more still going on when you're dating? Is there that kind of expectation when you go to somebody's house?
That's a very specific example. You know, if you go to someone's house.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, and plus I've been out of the dating scene for quite a while as well. But one thing, I have a good friend who went through a divorce 2 years ago. Hmm. And she has, so it's interesting now being similar ages, both having kids, and hearing her now experience in the opposite sex conversations. And there is this, from her perspective or what she's experienced, is, yeah, if I can hook you by saying, you know, hey, how are you doing? And you talk to me and have a conversation, because I'm just trying to get your attention. I'm the male trying to get your attention, and I want your time, and I want, you know, your conversation. Mm. I want you to be focused on me. And if you give me that, well, that's a sign that you like me and you want to go on a date with me. Even if it's a friendly conversation, even if it's, hey, our daughters play the same sport, and so we're always going to see each other at the games. And then this individual, you know, so she had the conversation, and he kind of made a couple jokes about, oh yeah, my daughter thinks that you and I should go on a date. Like, he wasn't even being straightforward and saying, I would like to take you on a date. He was trying to use his daughter. And she was like, this is weird, creepy. I'm not interested. And she was like, you know, no, I'm not interested in dating at this time, but thanks. So then she thought, okay, we're good, done. And then he came back and wanted to have another conversation. And, but he used something. He's like, hey, she's a financial advisor. Hey, I have a question about my 401k or something, some investment question. And she was like, ooh, is this another hook? Or does he really have a question? And she's got a passion for helping people with finances. So she took the call. And again, the instant he starts, he's kind of making up, oh yeah, should I switch? Very obviously surface questions. And then he started going into personal stuff. And she was like, damn it. He hooked me again. He suckered me in, because he knew I would want to talk. So then she had to explain again, I'm not interested. And it was funny, because I said, these are all behaviors. Now you've said, I don't want to date you. So just know that for next time, if he suddenly has another question. Well, then another time, he just observed her leaving a game, called her, thought that she looked sad. So he called her to check on her. And she was like, I was doing the whole, I don't want to pick up the phone, but our daughters play. I had to leave early. Maybe something happened to my daughter. So she just picked it up and talking, are you okay? I just want to check. You looked kind of upset when you were leaving. She's like, no, I'm fine. Just been a long day. He keeps talking. And he's like, well, do you want me to come over and you know, hang out? We can have a cup of coffee or tea or wine or whatever. Do you want me? And she's like, no, it's 8 o'clock at night. I need to get some food. I got to get home, let my dog out. I'm good. Thanks though. And he kind of kept her on the phone. And finally she got to the point where she was annoyed. She's like, no, I need to go. I'm almost home. So thanks, but we're good. She pulls into her driveway and she's getting out of her car. And of course she's got her dinner and like three bags. And there he comes walking up her driveway. He had driven to her house, was sitting at the end of her driveway waiting for her to get home. And she was just distracted, not aware, didn't even notice his car in her cul-de-sac or like wherever it was. And I said, what? You told him three times not to come over and he still showed up. And she's like, so she's standing there with all this stuff, her dog's barking, food, she hasn't eaten. and he's making small talk. And she goes, Kelly, I felt so bad. I didn't want to let him in the house because then how would I get rid of him? But I didn't want to be rude and tell him to leave. And I'm like, you told him 3 times not to come over. That is stalking. I go, if that would have been me, I got out of my car and seen him. I would have said, what are you stalking me? And said it really loud because I'm going to call out that behavior in my mind. Like, this is how I would handle it. I know that's not how she would handle it. She's smaller stature. She's like, I wouldn't know what to do if he got upset about that. But it's those type of things where those social mores, well, I don't want to be rude. And he was misreading because she's been nice to him. Oh, you know, she answered my call. She must be interested. And it's so tough because she's like, now I feel like I have to be the bitch and be rude, not return texts, not return calls. But yet I'm still going to have to see him at games. I still might see him at school events. And so she's upset because even though she was clearly communicating, I'm not interested, he didn't get the message. So I do think there's some social mores there where if a girl smiles at you, she means she's interested. And then if we don't, then we're, you know, we have the resting face. So it's like, we can't win, you know, or if I'm not, or if I, you know, if I'm just nice to you because I'm trying to be a nice person, yeah, then all of a sudden, oh, she must be interested.
You know, it's fascinating. Was he divorced too? I can't remember if I got the part of the story right.
He ended up finding out that he was separated. Okay, and he was about to be going through a divorce.
Yeah, that sounds about right then. So he's probably, his judgment's completely clouded. Yeah. I mean, we took it too far anyway, way too far. But you can tell by his behavior patterns that his emotions were overtaking his logical thinking component. As we call it, the limbic system overtook his prefrontal cortex, if you want to get academic about it. But it definitely was a sign of that he was just, he was really hoping that there were signs there. That's what it is. He's probably really lonely and he's really hoping for signs and he's ignoring everything that's going on because there's a lot of signs there that said she's not interested. And that's the sad thing, right, Kelly? There's not like a training. There's some dating books, but everybody's so different and how do they handle the approach? And sometimes, how would you say the verbal judo in dating can be complex?
Yes.
That becomes a big challenge. So I remember, it's interesting because I started a podcast with a buddy of mine who's an FBI profiler. And maybe we should have you on that show too. That's kind of a fun one because we're talking about dating. I shared a story from years ago when I was being pursued by a girl and I wasn't sure at the time. I was pretty clueless way back when. I wasn't really sure what was going on. And she got upset at the very end because I finally asked her out. I thought, okay, I'll take a 50-50. I think she's interested. And she said, I don't know what the heck I needed to do to get you interested in me. And I kept looking at her going, really? I didn't see him. I didn't see those. I didn't think that was a clue. I just thought you were being nice. And so it's interesting how people have different interpretations. And I call these like ambiguous terms. If somebody says, oh, they love me, that doesn't tell me very much. Because I'll give you my definition of what love means to me, but for Kelly, it could be totally something different. For Jody, it could be totally, totally different. I have no idea what that means. And sometimes for those, some people believe that the other person, this is going to get a little too much in my own head, but some people think the other person's thinking the same way they are.
Mm-hmm.
And if I send this signal out, oh, they're going to pick up on it because that's how I would perceive it. Right. It's not the case at all. Yeah, and now we're kind of steering away, but it's a very fascinating conversation because it gets so nuanced, so complex, so fast in the dating thing. And again, I don't know. I mean, everybody that caught that situation you provided too, situational awareness was paramount in that situation because thankfully nothing ever happened to her. It doesn't sound like nothing ever happened to her physically. She wasn't assaulted or anything.
And I think that the validation sometimes is what women need. You know, as her best friend, me saying, you weren't in the wrong. That was totally inappropriate.
Yeah.
Is they maybe sense that, like, oh, this feels really weird or awkward, or I'm getting an intuition signal that is being creepy, but we don't have to articulate, or it's a challenge to then say, you know, I shared the Harvard Business Review article on the good guys. Like, we have to quit giving excuses without really understanding the situation, because I've heard this before, not necessarily directed at me, but in general, in a statement of, oh, really? He's such a good guy. He's never acted that way towards me. And it then goes back to that conversation of manipulators is, well, of course, if you're not the target of their stalking behaviors, of their fascination or their obsession, then you're not going to see it, or you might not see it, or it'd be easy enough to miss it because they're not directing those behaviors at you, or they're even really good at making everybody around them think they are just, you know, the best thing since sliced bread. And it's building up the community, the circle of friends to then downplay when somebody says, well, that makes me uncomfortable. Or, you know, they stayed late at the party to help me clean up. But then I got a really creepy vibe when all of a sudden I realized it was just going to be the two of us in this space. And people are like, oh, well, he was just being nice. Don't you want someone to help you? And so that's where a lot of times I find myself saying, when people are like, well, what's your number one advice? I'm like, it depends. You can't.
A lot there of that.
No such thing as a prescriptive situational awareness or self-defense. And that's why I always say, just get curious. Get curious about yourself. Why does something make you afraid? What is in your orient filter? What past life experiences? Why do you get that butterfly in your stomach, your intuition alarm bells going off? I use this example, and I had the horrible bosses movie, or anytime you've had a bad boss in your past. Well, I had one who had an Irish accent, and I didn't think anything of it. Like, whatever. Thanks for a learning experience of what I never want to work with again. Right. Moving on. Not kidding you. 2 years, 3 years after, thought long gone, I was at an event, heard a speaker speaking in an Irish accent, and instantly I was like, right back. And the emotional response that I had to even hearing that accent, I was like, whoa, didn't expect that sort of a flashback to that situation. And so sometimes I'm like, it could be a sense of smell. You know, smells are most closely linked to memories. So you may smell something and all of a sudden get uncomfortable, you know, why, where does that come from? So I always try and say, get curious about yourself, because you have to decide your boundaries. You have to be aware of the things that make you uncomfortable, so that way you can avoid them sooner, whatever the situation may be.
It's great stuff. Again, we're talking to Kelly Sayer. The book is called Sharp Women. Oop, I lost my thing. You can go to the Diamond Arrow Group on Instagram. You can also go to the diamondarrowgroup.com as I try to find my picture of that Sharp Women book. You can call it Embrace Your Intuition, Build Your Situational Awareness, and Live Life Unafraid. Kelly Sayer, Sayre. You brought up a lot of great points again. And back to that other point too, sometimes you do hear that where, you know, he's such a great guy. It's interesting, as I always bring up to people, life is complicated. I tell them it's not simple. Whoever tells you it's simple, it's just not true. There's very few things that are simple, but everything's so nuanced. It's just complicated. Like you mentioned, I mean, she had, I guess this is like two or three thoughts and melted into one here, but she had the thoughts of, I have to see him again at the games. And that's something that happens a lot with all of us. A lot of times females and males, but if you're parents and you have to see the individual who's made a pass at you and you decline the pass, now all of a sudden, you know, you're gonna have that uncomfortable, maybe seeing them at parties, if they're having children the same age in the same school, it has Halloween parties, whatever it may be, you might have to bump into that person. It becomes awkward pretty quickly. So that there's a lot of other things that are happening behind the scenes. And that other part too, I always use this example, and this isn't to say that everyone's like this, or you have to think that everyone's like this, but this is how weak that one phrase of, he's such a nice guy, is because, you know, Ted Bundy, serial killer, killed, I think, over 25 or 30 women, unfortunately. Super charismatic guy. I think he scored a 36 on his psychopathy checklist, which is an instrument to measure the degree of psychopathy a person has.
So what's the range? Like, what's a normal range?
Yeah, good question. So anything over 20, you're in low range. Anything over 30, yeah. If you have a friend over 30, I wouldn't hang out with that person. But that's just me. Bundy, I think, was like a 36. The highest you can get is 40. So Bundy was pretty darn close. And they all don't operate the same way, so don't get too crazy, folks. I mean, if they score 36, doesn't mean they're going to be a killer necessarily.
Right.
Even Jeffrey Dahmer wasn't that high. He was down to 25. He was more what they would consider a sociopath. He seemed to have some kind of kernels of empathy there. But anyway, when you go back to Bundy, I knew one of the women who worked with him, she passed away now. She wrote a book on it, Ann Rule. But
I love Ann Rule. I was going to bring that up. I grew up. I loved her books. Plus, she had the crime scene photos in the middle. And I know that's kind of, this is where I would always wonder about myself, but I could only read one Ann Rule book at a time. And then I had to read Fluff because I was like, otherwise I look at everyone as a potential scary person, you know? And I love that her books weren't looking for a specific demographic of a villain. You know, there was the woman who like burnt her house down with her kids in it. You know, poisoning her husband with castor beans, I think, right? He was a doctor.
We had one the other day with Drano, so.
Oh, yeah. I saw that in California. I was like, does she not know that they've, oh no, he put the cameras in the house. Sorry.
He put the
this
cameras
in the house. This is where I go off suspicious. On a tangent.
Yeah, I interviewed Ann. And
no way. Good.
Yeah, long time before she passed. And a friend of mine that was actually really good friends with Ann. They would go to dinner every few weeks, and he really knew her really well. He was a homicide detective, was a homicide detective up in Seattle. But she told the story of where she worked next to Ted Bundy, and she thought he was the nicest guy, and he was to her. Mm-hmm. But and like you mentioned earlier, at least serial killers have certain targets, and for whatever reason, they're going to hit that. And for Bundy, it was the rejection he got, which is another comment you made earlier as well, which I don't want to get them upset, back to the fawning technique, because I forgot to mention this, serial rapist typologies are really hard. There's a lot of different types of typologies now, what, you know, different types of serial rapists, and everybody's got their typology. They got Groths, which is one of the more popular ones, G-R-O-T-H, and they list like five or six different types of serial rapists. Hmm. And I remember interviewing, I don't know if you would know, Ann Burgess, and that TV show on HBO, I think it is, or Netflix, whatever that one, is it Dangerous Minds, or what the heck was it? The one with the serial killer guys, the FBI profiler guys.
I will tell you, I don't watch much TV.
Mindhunters.
So if you're going to do any reference to pop culture TV, I'm probably going to miss it.
That's okay. So am I. I just hear it from the students. Yeah, Mindhunter. Anyway, she's worked with the original FBI profilers on cases. And she wrote a book on victimology. But we also talked about it because one of the most difficult things is how do you train a woman to deal with a serial rapist? Because some people would say, you know, you try to talk them down. And there are some serial rapists that if you talk to them and say, hey, I'm not the person you think I am, because they're in some delusion, that can work. Hmm. Some say, hey, you fight back, which can work. Because if you have a certain type of rapist, the minute you scream, they're gone. The tattoo rapist, I think it was a teardrop tattoo rapist over in LA, which they never caught. The minute they fought back, he took off. Hmm. But he raped, I think, 15 or 12 or something. And he had a different MO, and we can get to that later. But so each one was really unique. And then the other one, I think it was the anger one, sadist one, if you actually fought back, that would set them off. And they're going to, the odds.
They like it. It turns them on.
For them, yeah. It was actually angered them, and it would get them even more upset. Some did get turned on by it. Some got actually more angry, and you increase your risk of fatality. Some are going to kill you anyway, unfortunately. They're going to kill you anyway. It doesn't really matter what the hell you do, so you have to fight. So again, how do you advise them? That was the talk we had on that show, because it's like, okay, it sounds like the best bet is fight. If you don't think you're getting out of there. Because there are some women who say, I'm just going to do what I got to do and then survive, which is what our evolutionary psychology would say. We're going to do whatever it is just to survive. And I get that.
Right.
And sometimes that will work because certain ones will walk away. and others won't. But you never know. You can't just sit there and have a book with you and say, which one are you?
Right. You know, wait a minute. Like, what was your profile? What was your score?
Yeah, it doesn't work that way, right? No. So that's the complexity of it. And I guess I get to all that back to the original comment of he's a nice guy, which is really hard to pick. It's like the mass shooters. You can't really, you can tell some things, but you know, it's still very hard to identify anybody. I think I wiped out everything I was going to say about that. Oh, the other go ahead.
I was going to say, to your point, is one perspective shift that I had learned at a training called Violence Dynamics here in Central Minnesota. And it's Rory Miller and Randy King, Casey Kiakaisen, and Tammy R. McCracken, is they really preach there's no wrong way to survive. Period. Yeah. No wrong way to survive. So you do what you as an individual feel in that moment. And as much as we can mentally strategize, we can go through drills, we can run scenarios, until you are in the moment, you cannot for sure guarantee how you will react under that stressful situation as you're adrenalizing. So if you can just, you know, it's kind of, you get back, what is the one thing to walk away with? There's no wrong way to survive. And no matter, because a lot of times we also don't talk about the aftermath of an event, especially with women. Okay, you've been raped, or you used violence to save yourself. Well, once that initial kind of wears off, people might look at you differently. You were able to stab somebody in the eye with your keys. You know, and so there's a little bit of like, you're different now. You're changed, or my perception of you changed because, and maybe I could be wrong. I'd love to know what you think the social mores around females using violence, because what I hear a lot of times goes into masculinity or toxic masculinity conversations, that violence is a bad thing. And it's like, depends. Violence used to protect yourself or preserve your own life should be completely acceptable. But if we're just preaching violence is bad, violence is bad, violence is bad in a generic overarching way, then people are going to internalize that message, and maybe will they then lean more towards fawning? And then that emotional trauma that they experience because they fawned, then do they have the guilt of, well, I let it happen. I didn't fight back. And those traumatic scars are easier to hide and are not as easily talked about, because you look fine on the outside, but now you have this blame, guilt, and we see the decline in mental health because people are internalizing a lot of things. Again, this is another whole, this is like 18 trains leaving the station going different directions, Dr. Carlos. So you let me know when I shouldn't bring any more trains to the station.
No, what it's causing, Kelly, is it's causing me to have to bring it back. That's what it's causing, because we have to continue the conversation. We've touched on so many topics that need to be expanded on. And I'm going to try to answer both of your questions if I can. The first one you asked earlier was anti-bullying. That was an interesting observation. I hadn't thought about that. I do realize, again, people mischaracterize things. As you mentioned earlier, context is important. People mischaracterize when to apply it. It's not utopia. It's not universal. You don't apply anti-bullying to everything. Yes, I would love nobody to pick on nobody. But bad people don't do that. They're going to exploit it, actually.
Right.
They're going to look for that moment. So you have to be able to understand who's a threat, who's not a threat, who's a red flag, who's not a red flag, who do you use it against, not. I understand what you're saying, too. The anti-bullying maybe has made people more feeling guilty and responding certain ways to that. I guess I can't really answer because it depends on so many different scenarios. You know, if I'm talking about school, if I'm talking about work, I'm talking about this, it's going to really depend. So I'll bypass that one for a second. The other question you mentioned in regards to violence for women, that I find very fascinating, because I do think it depends on the circles you're in. And what I mean by that is I'm noticing a lot more women in self-defense. I mean, they're everywhere now. So you see them a lot in jiu-jitsu tournaments. They got the Medusa one, which is like a combat jiu-jitsu version. You have them there. You have them kickboxing. And I think it's great. If you folks have said this before, if you've never been to a jiu-jitsu, if you've never been to a self-defense course, I personally like jiu-jitsu in the sense because it's very different. The interaction you have with the other person is not the same as you would boxing. I love boxing. I love Muay Thai. But it's still not, the interaction you have is not the same because you don't have somebody right next to you. You're not grabbing somebody. You're not slipping off their sweat. You're not experiencing that kind of connection that happens with an individual in any other sport, except maybe a little bit in judo, where you do have it, but most of the time you're both flying around in the air half the time. So that's a little different too. But the jiu-jitsu, when you're wrestling with each other. So as Kelly knows, with her brother and others who had siblings like that, you know, you do that. So it's a very unique experience because physiologically it's unique. It releases oxytocin and all kinds of things. You bond with that individual in a different way. That doesn't have to be romantic. You bond with them in a friendship way a lot of times in these jiu-jitsu classes because you're interconnected physiologically and physically. So it's interesting. So I don't know. I don't know if I see that as much. I guess it'd be interesting to see what type of individuals you're referring to. We're looking at women. Oh, wow. You're doing this now. I wonder if it's other females or is it males that you see or you've heard that are responding in kind of a, whoa, I don't know about this.
Again, it depends. The women that I have in mind when I ask that question are typically the women who are coming to my class. Is they're coming from a zero experience background in any sort of self-defense tool. Like maybe somebody bought them a mace spray when they left for college. They never sprayed it. You know, they don't even know where it is, or it's at home in a drawer. Or they've never done martial arts. They've never been an athlete in a physical athletic sport. And so the thought of even touching another human being or causing any pain is very, very foreign. One of the when I was going through training with the Violence Dynamics folks and then Tammy's 500 Rising stuff, is one of the first exercises that I found so interesting is reach out and touch your partner's face. Just touch their face. And the amount of, you know, when I'm making this uncomfortable face of like, wait, what? Because we don't like our faces touched.
Sure.
And so there was a lot of like, okay, we got to get over that mental obstacle. And so that's where, when I say with violence, is you have these people who have never, they can't even imagine touching another person's face. And yet we're telling them, you know what, if you can kick them here, grab and twist here, you know, poke them in the eyes, you know, crush their throats. I'm like, that's not going to be advice that every individual is going to be able to internalize and then make a mental plan to do. We have to get curious and figure out where they're at, you know, and that's where I go back to how, okay, the avoidance. Well, if you're not the type who can imagine using violence to defend yourself, you know, or you say it, but then you get in that situation, again, it all depends. Who is that person? Is he known to you? Are they known to you? Is it a female? You know, we tend to think of male on female violence because that's typically statistically what we see. But there's also scenarios where, you know, it's female on female violence. And I've heard a friend of mine's dad was a prison guard, and he said the most violent prison fights were in the female prison system that he had ever seen. And so how can we avoid? How can we de-escalate a situation? How can we see something coming? And then if you don't want to be physical, then no. Okay, then let's work on your avoidance, your awareness, your de-escalation skills. And two, I want to say in the book Behave, I'm trying to remember who it's by, but that, and this would be a question you might be able to answer. I feel like I read that there was literally a narrow pathway in women when it came to protecting our young, the whole mama bear. Like there is a narrow pathway that if you mess with our kids, it's all gloves are off. You know, we are going all in. But when it comes to saving our own life, that's not as strong of a neural pathway.
I think you're talking about Behave from Sapolsky.
Yes.
Yeah, I think he's got it in that, but it's either that book or the Zebras Don't Have Ulcer book or something. Yeah, he has that. He had that one with the self-defense, which is very true too. Yeah, moms have a very unique neuronal pathway. But the interesting thing too, I like the way you talked about it. It's almost like a desensitization or a progression. In other words, touch the face first. Because if you haven't done anything and you're not experienced to that, then going from that to, it's almost like going from 0 to 50 or 0 to 100. If you're going to go from here, you haven't touched anybody, never thought about it, but you're going to stick this thing in somebody's throat. Okay. I'm going to stick my keys in the guy's throat. That's going to hurt. So that's going to be a totally different mindset from one level to another, but slowly getting into it. And again, folks, like I always said, if you haven't done any of the martial arts, just get out there and try it. It's the best thing. I always tell people, and I'm sure Kelly would agree, I have to learn how to phrase this better, but if you haven't been punched or hit in some capacity somehow in a safe environment, you don't want it to be on the street for the first time. You really just don't. So if you can put on something protective where they can hit you, either in the stomach, whatever, you're holding a pad and you get to feel somebody kicking the pad, a Muay Thai box, whatever, just starting to get to feel that being hit really makes a difference, because I think there's a huge shock factor if you've never been tagged before or punched, I guess, better phrase, or kicked. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I agree. The classes that I've, so like I said, I don't have the physical self-defense background. And so in situations where I've teamed up with a physical self-defense instructor, so I've done kind of the classroom learning, the awareness piece, and then we've rolled over and done, okay, now we're going to do some physical, just to get you used to being physical, to your point. And it's awesome. I always love seeing an individual who is like tapping the pad, you know, with her, mm-hmm. with the palm of her hand, you know, just gently tapping, and then, okay, switch pads with your partner, do the same, you know, hit the pad. And then going through that progression of getting more comfortable, getting, learning how to use force and power generation and all of those things. And then see them like, yeah. And then, okay, now let's start yelling. Let's start using our voice. Like, it's not like, no, get back. It should be like, no, or whatever it may be. And that's always fun for me, because I can see them walk out of class a little bit more confident. You know, they're like, hey, I can do that. You know, I won't say how old my mother is. Sorry, mom. My mom came to a class, and even her experience, because she's, you know, I'm older. I'm not as strong. I'm not as physically capable. She played softball when she was younger, but that was about it. And just seeing her like, oh, I really can manipulate this person who is larger than me by doing these motions, or by doing this, or if I remember the power generation, and she wouldn't call it power generation, but by really, you know, using my core muscles and all of these things, that gave her a little extra boost. And going back to that study that you mentioned, New York City, you said the Gates study
yeah.
Where they observed people walking down the street, recorded, and then said, how you carry yourself matters.
Absolutely.
So if you gain some confidence in whatever martial arts, you just get more functional fitness, whatever it may be, you're going to carry yourself different, which again, when we talk about the predator mindset, criminal mindset, that's very uncomfortable for a lot of people to talk about. So I'll say, have you ever hunted? As soon as you see a deer, do you shoot right away? No, you watch. Is this the right time? Do they wear, you're observant. You got to have patience. And so I say, think of it in that way, as they're going to observe. So just like the 7-second rule and first impressions that we teach in career classes, how you walk into a room, if you make eye contact, the firmness of your handshake, think of that same first impression as you're walking down the street. Like, I want to have the impression of that, I know where I'm going, I'm aware, I'm alert, and paying attention to my surroundings. And unfortunately, you'll never know what you avoided, but I'd rather walk that way and avoid it. And then going, oh, I'm shuffling my feet, my head's down, and I'm having a bad day. And then I'm in a situation all of a sudden, caught off guard, because they're also looking for people to catch off guard. So those are the different things that I like to talk about, because they're in business, in so many business classes and so many women's empowerment movements, right? We're using the same ways, teachings, but we're just applying it to maybe their career goals or how to excel in and having a good relationship in a marriage relationship or partner relationship, that communication skills and, you know, getting curious, like understanding that other perspective, understanding your stuff. Well, those things can all be applied to personal safety, but we're not talking about, hey, those foundational skills can also apply in making you less of a target. You know, we've all heard the saying, she's 100 pounds soaking wet, but I wouldn't mess with her. So it's how you carry yourself.
It's great stuff. I wish we could keep you here. We could go on for hours on this. Like I said, we'll have to bring it back. That's for sure. And it's interesting, folks, is I know it's going to be a little bit of a different podcast for you because we're not talking about tactics and things of that nature, but it is a tactic, understanding the mind of the individual, not only of the perpetrator, but also of the victim and the target. And in this case, females are different. They think a little bit different. They have different, not responsibilities, but they have different views and perspectives that can influence how their situational awareness is being applied. And that can be detrimental. And if you're a situational awareness coach, law enforcement, military, this would be really important for you to know if you have clients that are females, which I'm sure you do. If you have siblings, sisters, moms, daughters, anything of that sort can really help because it is a little bit of a different mindset. There's different thinking patterns that are going on in the female brain compared to the male brain. Not that one's better or worse. It's just that they're different. Right. And you really have to be able to figure that out. Yeah. That's why what I love talking with you, Kelly, because it really is a huge distinction. And that makes a big difference in how you're going to apply this stuff. Again, folks, go to thediamondarrowgroup.com. You can also find the Diamond Arrow Group on Instagram. And it gives me an idea of maybe doing a live interview with Kelly in the future on my Instagram page, Dr. Carla's show. You can go over there and check that out. I don't know when, but it might be an interesting one for people to have questions. I think, again, approaching females with this strategy is great. The book is called Sharp Women, Enhance Your Intuition, Build Your Situational Awareness, and Live Life Unafraid by Kelly Sayre, S-A-Y-R-E. Kelly, I can't thank you enough for doing this. It was great stuff.
No, thank you. And you had mentioned the Diamond Arrow Group at the beginning and you thought it was cool. I'm big into symbolism. An arrow through a diamond means confidence or courage moving forward. So that's why I named my company Diamond Arrow, because I want women to have confidence as they go forward in life. And so I always like to tell that little tidbit. And with the book, each chapter is a scenario. So am I being followed? Persistence is stalking. It's not romantic necessarily. And because I was trying to give the perspective of what females see in certain scenarios. And I will tell you, my husband, who's retired military, almost retired law enforcement. Even he, when he read the book, said, wow, there's just things. I mean, I live with you. I have watched your journey of this. And he goes, there's still things in the book that as a man, as law enforcement, that I went, I never thought of it that way. So I encourage even your readers, don't just buy this book for your females in the life that you care about. I would encourage you to take a look at it too and just give yourself a little bit of a perspective. Absolutely. That maybe you didn't have before.
That's a great point. No, you did a great job of enmeshing both of those areas, the female mindset as well as situational awareness. It's not something that anybody's done. So it's great stuff. I loved it. It was great. Thank you so much again, Kelly. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And I look forward to having more conversations.
Absolutely. I think it'd be a lot of fun. We just touched the tip of the iceberg. There's no doubt about that. Folks, again, the Diamond Arrow Group. You can find them over on Instagram. You can go to the website, thediamondarrowgroup.com. Also, the book, Sharp Women, Enhance Your Intuition, Build Your Situational Awareness, and Live Life Unafraid. Well, folks, you know what to do. Make sure to share, subscribe. Hey, go to Instagram, my page, and see if, when we pop up. If not, I pop up, do that live interview, and you can ask your questions there. Take care, everybody. Make sure to stay safe.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.